503 in the Pew Bibles. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's eunuchs and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, assigned to attend to her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and to plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death, unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king." When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer: "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this?" Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai: "Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions.
Thank you, Jenny. So over the past few weeks, we've been re-meeting some remarkable women, and I don't just mean the ones sitting in this seat. There's obviously some pretty remarkable women here. Pretty amazing women. But we've been looking at some women of faith, some women of courage, which hopefully some of those will pop up in a minute, some of the lessons from their lives. Can anybody tell me what women we've been talking about in our morning services and in our studies? Ruth, well done. We talked about Ruth a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Who else? Rahab? Hannah? Sarah? Any more? There's a fighting one. Deborah, yep. Sarah, Miriam, Deborah, Rahab, Ruth, and who was with Ruth? Naomi. It was as much about Naomi as it was about Ruth, wasn't it? And Hannah last week. So we've been looking at some of the women in the Bible and then in our small groups, which we have. If you're not in one of the small groups, please come and talk to us and you can find out where they are. And one will be here, led by Bob and Jean this week, on Tuesday morning, for those who can make it. That's really a good time, and there's others on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday when we discuss these things in a bit more detail and talk through some of the challenges. So in the lives of these women, as we've worked through some of the stories of the women in the Bible, we've seen how they've seen God's promises fulfilled. We've seen how they obeyed God. We see how they took risks in faith. We see how they saw God's salvation and became included in the purposes of God. The wonderful thing about at least two of those, Rahab and Ruth, who were excluded because of their profession, because Rahab was a prostitute and Ruth a foreigner, would have been excluded from the people of God, but because of what happened to them, they became included. And there's some wonderful verses in the New Testament, isn't there, to us as Christians, that we have been included in the purposes of God. It's good not to be left out, isn't it? When I was a boy at school, this is going to be a sob story. Are you ready? How are your emotions going to cope with it? You've heard it before, have you? Oh, well, because you would have heard it because you've been with me 45 years. Right. When I was at school and it was time to pick the football team, you know, and I was always the last one left. Ever felt that? It's a terrible, sad story, isn't it? It's not nice. But this, we learnt about these ladies that they were included. They were included in the promises of God. And we've learnt that we are included in the promises of God when we come to Christ. So these women that we've been talking about are fantastic examples to us. There are amazing lessons from their lives to learn about God's actions in and through us. And the way that God includes us as individuals in his promises, whether we're men or women or whatever, God includes us in his promises. Thank you, David. Next one, today we're going to talk about Queen Esther. Now, does anybody know something about the story of this book, which is absolutely unique in the Bible, absolutely unusual? There's one strange thing about this book of Esther. You know what it is? Say that again, Tim. It doesn't mention God. Does it mention prayer? Well, they fasted, but if you read it, didn't mention they should pop up if you put that up. Go for the next one. There we go. No mention of God or prayer or anything faith-related. It's a strange book of the Bible that doesn't include God. But if you read the story, you will begin to see that God is in action throughout the story. Now, there's reasons why that might have been, why this story didn't include God or the name of God or a mention of God or even a mention of prayer. It may well have been because this story was circulated amongst Jews in captivity who were not allowed to worship their God. And therefore, it was a story that they would understand. It was a story of the blessing and leading of God, but others wouldn't see that in it. So it was a story sent, I think, to encourage them to see how God works in people's lives without actually mentioning the name of God. The story goes something like this. You can go, oh, we've gone back now, haven't we? We've gone backwards, David. Yeah, go forward. Oh dear, you're not usually used to this, David. It must be just one of those flip weeks. Encourage him, please. The story is set in the Persian Empire. The Jewish people, Israel, are in captivity. They were in captivity initially in Babylon, and now they've moved on to the Persian Empire. The king at the time of Persia was King either Xerxes or Ahasuerus, depending whether or not you want to spit or not. Ahasuerus is quite a difficult one to say, isn't it? But then Xerxes is not much better. But King Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, has a huge party. And as part of this party, he calls for his queen, who is having her own party for the ladies down the corridor, and he says, will you come from your party and parade yourself in front of all my friends? Because basically he was a rather boastful sort of king, and he said, I have this beautiful wife. Guys, and it says he's had a few in the Bible. It said he's had quite a few, you know, glasses of wine and this and that, and he was a bit the worse for, or a bit the better for it, or whatever way you want to look at it. He'd had a few anyway. And he said, please send my wife up. Send my wife, and she can parade herself in front of all my friends. And do you know what the queen said? It's a fairly short answer. Well, it might have included the word off somewhere, I suppose. But certainly it was in the negative, and she refused to come. And this is what happened afterwards in verse 16 of chapter 1. Then Memucan, who was a member of the king's entourage, replied in the presence of the king and his nobles, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against all the nobles and the people to the provinces of King Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median women of the nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. So basically, these guys got together and they said, the king's wife has refused to do what he asked. This is going to spread across the kingdom, and all those wives are going to stop being obedient. We're going to have absolute chaos with disobedient wives throughout the kingdom. So basically, the king said, right, she's out. She's no longer queen. I'm going to have what was effectively a beauty contest. And I will choose a new queen. It was a sort of a Miss Perfect Persia, whatever the year was, BC, whatever. And he's going to have a huge competition to choose himself a new wife. Now the story moves outside of the palace to a Jewish gentleman called Mordecai, who in the early part of his life had adopted his niece, Esther, as his daughter because her parents had died. And he was looking after her and bringing her up. And Esther, a beautiful girl, was included in the competition. But secretly, nobody knew that she was Jewish. She hid her identity and came into the palace. Mordecai was sitting at the palace gate. As he sat at the palace gate, you know, if you're anything like me, you like to, when I'm at work in my office, in the other job that I do in the afternoons, after part of the week rather, I love to sit in my office and listen to people walking past the door and snippets of their conversation. Sometimes they're quite amusing because you only hear part. But Mordecai was listening, if you like, outside the palace, and he heard somebody plotting to murder the king. He passed the information to Esther, who passed it to the leaders that were looking after her, who passed it to the king, and the king was able to foil the plot against him. So remember that in the background to the story, because Mordecai has done something really to help the king and keep the king in place. Later, we meet a man called Haman. Haman is promoted to the second highest place in the kingdom, to a very high rank in the kingdom. And because of his high rank, when Haman passes by, you're supposed to bow down to the ground. I can't do that because of my back's gone, but bow right down to the ground in honor of Haman when he passes by. Mordecai refused to bow down to Haman. And so began a big dispute, a quiet, seething dispute, where Haman hated Mordecai. And Haman began to hate all Jews because Mordecai refused to bow down to him. And so he hatches a scheme in his position as second in the land to destroy all the Jews throughout the land. And he manages to persuade the king to sign an edict to that effect. And in the chapter that we read, Mordecai comes to Esther, who's now queen. She's won the competition, by the way. She's become Miss Persia. She's become queen of Persia alongside the king. She wins the competition. He loves her and he accepts her because of her beauty and her character. And Mordecai comes to see Esther and he says, Esther, you can intervene. If you explain to the king and tell him that this is your people, you can save your people. And Esther says, but I'd do that in fear of my life. Because if I go into the king and begin to speak to the king, he can have me killed. I'm not allowed to just open the door and walk in, as wives can normally do with their husbands. I have to risk going to the king. If he holds out the golden scepter to me, it's okay. Otherwise, I will be put to death. It's a huge risk for me to go into the king. And Mordecai looks at her and he says, you know, don't think you'll get away with this. Somebody will find out you're Jewish and you will be killed too. But on the other hand, just think about it. Maybe, and this is probably the most important verse in the whole of the book, maybe God has brought you to this place for this very reason. Maybe you're there so that your people, the Jewish people, can be saved and can be free. God has brought you to royal position. The words are, for such a time as this. The story goes on, and Esther goes to the king and takes a risk, and the king accepts her. And she says, King, if you would like, please, to come to a dinner that I've prepared for you tomorrow, I'd like you to bring that second in command of yours, that lovely Haman. Will you please bring him? In the meantime, something else has been going on. Haman, out of his hatred for Mordecai, has built a huge gallows outside his house. And his intention is to find a way, as soon as the Jewish edict comes into place, to hang Mordecai on the gallows outside his house. Anyway, the story goes, it's a lovely story. It's a really, really worth reading, because the next part is as Esther comes to the king, and Esther, Haman, and the king have this lovely banquet together. And the king says, what would you like me to do for you, Esther? And she says, I'd like you to come again. It's such a good night. Let's do it again tomorrow, all three of us. And Haman goes home to his wife and says, this is fantastic. I'm second in command in the kingdom. I'm getting invited to tea with the queen. I'm really in a position of authority now. And he really gets his head is really swelling. But as time goes on, the question comes down. And as they meet again the second time, remember the hatred between Haman and Mordecai? The king discovers, in the meantime, between these two banquets, he discovers a story in the book of the Chronicles of the discovers that this guy Mordecai has actually done something. Remember the bit where Mordecai told him about the plot to kill him and saved his life? He just says, has anybody rewarded this guy? And they say, no, he's not been recognized at all for that. So he calls Haman in. He says, Haman, what would the king do for the man he delights to honor? And of course, Haman, because his head is far too big for the door, says, King, I know what I'd do. I'd put him on a horse, and I'd take him through the city, and I'd have a massive display, and I'd get everybody to bow down to him, and I'd say, this is what the king does for the man he delights to honor. I'd parade him in front of everybody. I'd give him all these rewards and gifts, and the king says, right, go and get Mordecai. Can you imagine what Haman's feeling now? Absolutely seething. But he's the second in command. He does everything the king says. He has to do it. And he has to take Mordecai and parade Mordecai around the city and say loudly, this is what the king does when he wants to honor someone. And of course, by now, the thing is really hotting up. Anyway, the next night, they come together again. Esther, the king, Xerxes, and Haman. And the king says again to Esther, what would you like me to do for you? And she then explains what has happened with the Jewish people and how the Jewish people are all going to be killed throughout the kingdom. And the king is cross. And he says, who's brought this plot to light? Who's decided on this? And she said, well, actually, king, it's the fellow sitting next to you, your second in command, it's Haman. Haman, by this time, is absolutely, well, literally shivering in his boots, scared out of his wits as to what's going to happen. And the king is so angry, he goes outside for a moment. And in the meantime, Haman kneels down beside the couch on which Esther is resting and says, please save me. And the king comes back in and he says, even now you're interfering with my queen. And here's a lovely bit of the story. They take Haman out and guess where they hang him? On the gallows prepared for Mordecai. What a story. What an amazing story this is. A fantastic story. An exciting story. A story with all the intrigue and backstabbing and goodness knows everything going on. But at the end, of course, Esther has saved her people. The king says, look, he says, the trouble with the law of the Medes and Persians is it can never be altered. So I can't backtrack on the law. But I'll pass another law that allows any Jews that are attacked to fight back and kill their attackers. So they'll have a fair chance in what happens. And effectively, the nation is saved. Isn't that an exciting story? But that's not the end for us today, because there's some lessons to learn. The first lesson I thought we learned was, next slide, David. It should say God's provision. It does. Well, it's fantastic. The most important verse in this whole passage is, who knows, says Mordecai to Esther, that you've come to royal position for such a time as this. You see, although God's not mentioned in this, Mordecai, as a Jew, clearly has a full faith in God. And when Esther calls them to go and fast, she actually, of course, means fast and pray. Although it doesn't actually say that, that's what's going on here. Prayer is going up from across the nation for Esther as she goes in to plead for the Jews. The wonderful thing about this is when the Israelites went into captivity, the Jews went into captivity, they were told this by God through Jeremiah. Let me read this to you from Jeremiah 29, verse 3. This is what, hang on a minute. He entrusted the letter to Elash, son of Shaphan, Gemariah, why can't they just be called George and Fred, these people? And Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, sent to King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. It said, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, and then eventually on to Persia. Build houses, settle down, plant gardens, eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons. Give your daughters in marriage so that they may have sons and daughters. Increase in number, do not decrease. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. And it goes on to say, really just settle in captivity. Live the right kind of life. Live the kind of life in that hostile environment that I have called you to do. And Mordecai, I believe, is doing exactly that. He is living the way God wants him to live in a hostile environment. And when he learns of a plot to kill the king, even though part of him might have said, this king has got us in captivity, I'd like to see him dead, he actually doesn't let that happen. He prays and works for the prosperity of the city to which he's called in. He begins to to live to God's way and lives God's way. And of course, he gets the reward for that, because he gets honored by the king when the king finally recognizes that he has done something good for the kingdom of Persia. But God has not neglected his people. I wonder if the people were fearful. If you were a Jew in that nation, would you think that God had neglected his people? Especially when you hear of this edict saying that all the Jewish people in the nation of Persia are to be destroyed. You must be wondering, where is God in all of this? And I suppose one of the challenges of all this is, how much should Christians be involved in the society, in the politics of our nation? Praise God that there are in this nation Christians in positions of influence. Sadly, sometimes they're the first people that we criticize. What should we be doing? Well, we should be praying for them, shouldn't we? The Christians who are in positions of influence. Sometimes, like Mordecai, we're not in a particular position that would naturally be a position of influence, but nevertheless, we can act and we can do something. I don't think Mordecai had any position of prominence at the beginning of this story. He was just an ordinary Jewish guy looking after a young daughter, or an adopted daughter. But God nevertheless used him in a way that influenced the whole of the nation of Persia. Isn't it amazing what God can do for us? If we really trust him, if we really live for him, live his way, God will use us to transform and change society. Megan is just a very ordinary girl, aren't you? Bethan, Megan's one of the others, isn't she? Bethan, a fairly ordinary girl from Northern Ireland, who God's brought all the way to Southampton. But do you think God can change things in Cantell School through you? Just through you? You need other people as well. But God can do something transforming. We believe that. That's why we as a committee back what Bethan is doing in Cantell, because we believe God can transform society through people who trust Jesus. And this is what's beginning to happen, isn't it, through Mordecai? I know it's a story about Esther, but Mordecai was the influence who pushed Esther and said, come on, Esther, you can do this thing. Because Esther at first said, I can't do this. It's too difficult. I can't do it. Mordecai says, you can do it. He didn't say with God, well, he probably did say with God's help, but it's not recorded that he said that, but I believe that's almost certainly what he said, something along those lines. He said, it's your people, it's your opportunity to do something. God's provided you with the abilities to go to the king and to call for salvation for the Jews. Christians are called to change society by their lifestyle. Mordecai changed things, not because he protested, not because he sat outside the palace with a big banner that said, down with the Persians, or anything like that. He just sat there and he lived his life as a Jewish person. He listened carefully. He looked for opportunity. And God provided him with the ability, and Esther with the ability, to get inside the palace and to transform things and change things. So God has provided, first of all, the strength for us, the power and ability to live well in the society that's rejected God. Do you think our society in large today has rejected God? In lots and lots of ways, people just aren't interested anymore. But deep down, there is an interest in God. And we can change things. Bethan wouldn't be where she is with young life without believing that she can transform things with the support of others and the power of God within you and the power of the Holy Spirit within you. Things can change. There can be live influence for him. Mordecai believed that, and he called Esther to believe that as well, and she did. The second thing we learn from this is not just God's provision, but we also learn about God's timing. The key verse is, who knows that God has brought you to such a position for such a time as this? Do you sometimes find that God seems to be inactive? Do you sometimes find that you're praying and God isn't working? Do you ever find that? I'm not going to be honest and answer, are we? Seriously, we all do, don't we? Sometimes the thing we're praying for doesn't seem to be happening. And the question I wrote down in these notes here is, how good are you at waiting? Because I think Mordecai and Esther had waited for an opportunity. An opportunity to stand up for God came along. Mordecai and Esther both obeyed and lived well. Now, for a time, Esther had concealed her identity as being a Jewish woman. At the time then, she said she had to come out into the open and say to the king, look, this is my people that you're going to have killed. This is my people that this edict has gone out against. And there comes a time in all our lives when we have to be prepared to stand up and say, I'm a Christian. I belong to Christ. I'm prepared to make a stand. Sometimes the first time for that might be when we're quite young. Sometimes it might be a little bit older. But there comes a time when we have to make a stand and say, I am a Christian and I'm not ashamed of it. And Esther went into the king and she said, I'm a Jew. I'm a Jewish lady, a Jewish girl. And I need you to know that it's my people you're persecuting. So the question is this morning, are we prepared to wait on God and wait on God's timing? As I grew up and experienced God in my life, what I used to often say is God has no sense of timing. What I meant was God is not doing things when I've told him to do them. You ever been there? You tell God exactly what you need him to do and when you need him to do it, and you say, Lord, if I need patience, give it to me now. You know that kind of story? You're waiting on God. But God says sometimes you have to wait on me and carry on living in a way that honors me. So even if you don't seem to be getting the answer, God says, carry on living the right way, obedient to me. And I believe that's exactly what Mordecai and Esther were doing until the time came when God said, the opportunity is there, go for it. And maybe God will say to us, in some situation, the opportunity is there, go for it. For a long time, Young Life talked about coming to Southampton. One day the committee was there, the person was there, and somebody said, we're going to go in faith and we're going to go for it. And then when we said that, the money was there. As a church, we've said, shall we appoint a part-time pastor? Shall we increase him from 3 days a week to 4 days a week? Let's go for it. Let's believe that's what God wants and let's go for it in faith. That's exactly what Mordecai and Esther were doing. They're going to go for it because they believed that God's timing had come. They'd seen God act, but they've been waiting. And I believe, although the words are not there in Esther, they've been praying. And they were fasting and praying. The whole nation of Israel within Persia were praying and fasting for God to provide and God to act. And the time came and God acts. You know, sometimes when we wonder, why is God not acting? Sometimes we just have to learn patience. And usually we find that when God acts, his timing is far better than ours. I wanted to do it now. And God says, just wait a minute. Things will change if you wait and listen on me. You will learn more. And there's so much in the people we've looked at the last few weeks where God says, wait on me. Literally waiting on God means coming to God in prayer, being prepared to look for his timing. So we've seen in this story God's provision and God's timing. But in the last bit, we see God's protection. God's protection. Because Mordecai, when he hears that God is out, that Haman is out to get the Jews, he realizes he has someone on the inside that God has prepared. Esther is scared. Would you have been scared? I think I would have been. Because the king could have had her killed, even though she was the queen. He could have done. I mean, he's already chucked poor old Queen Vashti out of the situation for disobeying him. What on earth could he do to Esther? But Mordecai says, hey, this is God's time. Esther, God's put you there for this reason. Take the risk, go for it, because God will keep you and God will protect you. In Ephesians 5, verse 6, it tells us to be careful how you live, making the most of every opportunity. In Colossians 4, it says, be wise in the way you act towards outsiders, making the most of every opportunity. And in 1 Peter 3, verse 15, Peter says, always be prepared to give an answer. So we're told, just like Esther and Mordecai, to be ready. And when we're ready, God says, I will act through you, I will provide the ability, I will work in my time, and I will keep you safe when you take a risk. Esther went for it. She took a life or death decision, and God honored her decision and saved not only her, but the whole of a nation in Persia. It was so exciting and fantastic. One sideline I thought of, you know, God promises to protect us in those times. But I knew a story of a missionary who went to the Orca Indians many years ago, Jim Elliot. I read his story through Gates of Splendor. I've read some of his journals, the things that happened to him at the time. He did this. He believed it was right to go to the Orca Indians, a group of people that had never heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. He went with his friends. They went in faith. They went in a plane. They landed amongst the Indians. They began to talk to them. And a few days later, their bodies were found. Did God protect them? Not in the way that we might have expected. But you know what happened because of the result of their death? When they were ready to go, they knew what could happen. But as a result of their death, the gospel came to the Orca Indians. The Orca Indians came to know Christ. Today, there are many Christians among the Orca Indians. So God did protect them in a different way. Well, there are challenges sometimes when God protects. Sometimes we ask questions, why did it happen that way? Why did they die? Of course, they went to their salvation. They went to be with God forever. So it was okay for Jim Elliot and his friends. They went to be with the Lord. That was okay. But God used that situation mightily and powerfully. So when we talk about God's protection, sometimes God works in ways that seem strange to us, but nevertheless achieves his purposes. That's something you might like to discuss in your groups later on in the week, how you deal with stuff like that and how God works in that way. So finally today, God provides the means for us to live the life. He wants us to live for him come what may. That's what Mordecai said. I'm in a strange land. I'm in a land of captivity. I'm amongst an alien people, but I will live the way God wants me to live, the way God's called me to live. And I believe God will honour that. And God does honour that. In fact, at the end of the story, Mordecai becomes not hung on the gallows that Haman had provided for him, but rather Haman ends up on the gallows. Where does Mordecai end up? Say? He got Haman's old job, yeah? He was top guy in the kingdom, second only to the king. So you see, God did honour him in a powerful way. I'm not saying if you obey God, you'll be second in the kingdom, necessarily, but God will honour that. That's absolutely sure. And finally, God protects and keeps me when I ask. So, powerful lady, Esther. Another one who, in the name of God, took a risk in faith and went ahead with something that God called her to do at the right time and knowing that God would keep her and take her through that situation. Whatever happened, she was prepared to go for it. Are we prepared to go for it in God? Are we prepared to step out the way some of these ladies did that we've learned about over the last few weeks? They're powerful stories. And for the gents, you can just, if you like, you can just, if you don't want to look to a lady, you can look to Mordecai as well. Because in this story, there are two people who acted on God's instructions and obeyed God. It's Mordecai, who led Esther. Esther was the one who took the risk. She went ahead and took that risk. It's a powerful and a wonderful story about the greatness of God. We're going to sing the song, Christ is My Reward.